You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, how can journalists engage and build trust with the communities they cover? A Wisconsin author shares solutions in a new book. First, Susanna Michaels joins me for the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. You rely on the Ideas Network for informative, interesting conversations. We count on you to keep programs like this one going strong.
That's right, because listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs, and that is why your gift of any amount right now makes an important difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have some fantastic news today. We had that two-day Public Media Giving Days $60,000 match. Well, we met that earlier today thanks to a huge amount of support from new and returning members. That was great to see. This is awesome news because listener support, your support, is the largest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on.
Thank you to everyone who gave. That it was really wonderful. And now let's keep the momentum going. We have a goal this hour of 15 gifts, and we will meet that goal one donation at a time. Let's start with yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio in part because we're commercial-free. That means we depend on other sources of funding. A state and federal and business sponsors, they're all important. But there is one big source that is bigger than all of them.
Yeah, that's right. The largest piece of funding for WPR programs comes from you. Your support makes all the difference. It's the backbone of how things work here. And when you give, you keep quality, independent news, talk, information on the air. So make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I know some of you out there are thinking, yeah, the radio is great. I love the conversations, blah, blah, blah. I want some swag, though, some WPR swag. Well, we've got some for you. This is new. First time in this drive, the new tumbler, the Wisconsin Public Radio glass tumbler. It's cool. It's got a sound wave design and a shout out. It says Wisconsin Public Radio on it. Ask for your tumbler when you give $12 a month or more at WPR.org. or 888-202-2552.
And making that gift and asking for that tumbler is a great thing to do. It'll only take a couple minutes of your time. All we need is your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, whether you want that tumbler, and how much you'd like to pay.
It really is quick and it's easy. And then your gift is going to support the stories and programs that keep you connected to Wisconsin and the world. Give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
All right, we already have a gift in the door. We are looking for 14 more people to join in this hour. Your gift today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes a bright future for the programs you rely on.
And grab that Wisconsin Public Radio glass tumbler. It's a great way to enjoy whatever your favorite beverage might be. And to show off the fact that WPR is your source for news and inspiration. Yeah, visitors will see you drinking out of it. Maybe you can even take it, you know, out in public to the picnic or bring your own glass to the restaurant.
No, I don't think so, Rob.
I don't think people
let
you do that.
You're getting carried away. Yeah.
I think do it. And then report back to us. Ask for your tumbler when you give $12 a month or more online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And being a sustainer is such a great way of supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. It's reliable. More than 50% of our members are now sustainers. And it's easy to set up convenient ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or a credit card. It just takes a couple minutes like any other gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Sarah in Madison says, I absolutely love Central Time each weekday afternoon. Sarah, thank you so much. So glad you're out there listening and that you gave. Really do appreciate it. How about you? Are you a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio? Well, I hope you understand that we count on people just like you to help pay for it, and you can make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I love member drives when I can sit in the studio with Rob and I can watch this show being made and see the producers on Slack, and it's really something. It's like a ballet, and they come up with great topics every day, and they do it for you, to keep you engaged, and it's your support that makes it possible. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you have my solemn promise. You will never witness me actually doing ballet. But thank you, Susanna. It's great to hear that you appreciate the behind-the-scenes look. Now, You can help make it happen. You can help make these conversations possible. Make your gift online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. Recent polls show more and more people question the trustworthiness of some of their media sources. Journalists are, in many cases, trying to rebuild that trust, especially at the local level. But a lot of smaller media outlets may be struggling to stay afloat and produce quality reporting with declining revenues. Our next guest researched new ideas to help reporters and editors engage with their communities and strengthen their relationship with their audience and, hopefully, build that trust back up. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How much do you trust your media outlets? Do you feel more of a connection with a local news provider, say, as opposed to something national or international? Have you ever talked to someone who is covering your community? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Susan Robinson is the Helen Firstbrook Franklin Professor of Journalism at UW-Madison. Her new book is called How Journalists Engage, A Theory of Trust Building, Identities, and Care. Sue, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
There have been a lot of conversations about declining trust in the media. That's a part of the focus of your book. And can you start us off by defining what you're talking about when you say trust in the context of journalists trying to rebuild it?
I'm so glad that you're asking me to nuance that, because so often when we ask people, hey, do you trust news media? People think about cable pundits, right? Mm-hmm. And they think about national news and they think about all of the misinformation that's swirling out there in lots of different circles. But what I'm talking about here really is more about local news. I'm talking about trust in your local reporters, trust in the news as an institution, but I'm also now talking about trust as a relationship that you may have both with the content that's happening about your news and the things that matter to you, but also the individual reporters who are out there producing it every day.
And a lot of your message is for somebody who's operating, publishing, editing, or reporting for some kind of local news outlet. What are some first steps that they can take to, I guess, do a trust inventory to see how much collateral they have with the communities they're out there covering?
Well, one of the things that I do is called applied research. So I work with organizations that work with newsrooms. So Trusting News, Harkin, Solutions Journalism Network, these nonprofit agencies that go in and help newsrooms think about engagement with audiences in much different ways than we used to think about it. And so what this book does is it documents this giant, massive retraining that's been happening over the last 10 years around engagement journalism, moving away from sort of this source-driven content and more towards developing relationships in different ways with all kinds of communities and all kinds of people. And so one of the things that this book has in the conclusion, of course, we have to have recommendations in every conclusion, is for journalists to think about how they're trying to reconfigure those relationships and their very specific suggestions.
Yeah. Can you give us a couple of those? What could they in local media coverage be doing?
Sure. So one of the things we've been doing a lot of over the last 2 years is asking journalists to conduct listening sessions with people who are not engaged with their brand. And so with the journalists that we've been trying to do this, we did 87 conversations. About half of those conversations were with people who identified as right-leaning and were completely distrustful of the local news brand. And the other half were with BIPOC groups, Native Americans or immigrants or African-Americans. And what we found was that even after 30 minutes of being listened to, and often these transcripts, by the way, were full of sort of anger and vitriol and just a lot of fear about journalism. Even after that 30 minutes, we asked these community members, hey, like, what did that conversation do for you in terms of trust building? And 87% of those community members after this interview said, yes, actually, this little 30 or 40 minute session where I didn't allow the journalists to get a word in edgewise, really built trust, not only in the journalist, but also in the brand. And more startlingly, more than a third of them said they would consider subscribing, which is huge, right? And so what we're trying to do is, how do we scale that, right? Because it's really hard to have those kinds of sessions with local and mid-sized newsrooms that are just already so constrained.
Now, let's talk about those constraints. I imagine a response you'll get from somebody at a local paper, and I feel this here in broadcast too, is, this all sounds great. I've got a deadline. I've got a show to do today. I've got three articles and then the web treatment and so on, so to do. When do we find time to do that kind of outreach that doesn't help me meet that deadline?
Yeah. And I should say that I was a journalist for a long time before I became a journalism professor. And I so feel that. And journalists today, they have so many financial pressures, but also more and more physical pressures, right? There's more and more violence against journalists, even in the US these days. They're doing really heroic work, I think, out on the front lines in all kinds of different situations. So we try to break everything down into little nuggets, little snacks of change, so to speak, because nobody can change everything that they do in the next couple of days, right? So for example, we look a lot at word choice and the kinds of terms that you use in headlines or you use in leads, which is the first sentence of any news article if you're in print. Checking in with people in the newsroom and trying to figure out, like, what kind of individuals do we have that are represented right here, not just racially or politically, but do we have any veterans? Do we have religious people? Do we have people who own guns? In order to understand all of the dimensions of difference, not only of how we're covering something, but also that are represented in all of our communities.
We're talking to UW-Madison journalism professor Sue Robinson. Her new book is called How Journalists Engage, A Theory of Trust Building, Identities, and Care. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like your local media outlets are connected to your community? Do you have a trust in local journalism? Do you have local journalism in your community? Many people don't. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Sue Robinson, professor of journalism at UW-Madison, author of the new book, How Journalists Engage, A Theory of Trust Building, Identities, and Care. Let's bring on a caller now. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, for the most part, I just don't trust the media, local media as well. I've been involved in open records requests with our school district. I've had conversations with reporters. I've seen them distort story after story or not report stories that were of interest to the community. The only thing I would say to everyone is be your own fact checker. Do not trust any individual source. Always ask the question, how are they trying to dupe me into believing their side of a story?
And Steve, before I let you go, I don't want to put a label on you. What would you consider your political perspective if somebody made you put a label on yourself?
I am a libertarian.
All right. Steve, thanks a lot for calling in. Sue, do you have thoughts for Steve and maybe for a media outlet, whether it's, you know, they've got the 2 days a week paper, or the Sun Prairie Star and Sun Prairie, or a Madison-based outlet to reach out to someone with Steve's perspective?
Yeah, and I think we hear that perspective more and more, especially as we have all of these misinformation bots and we have all of these players in the game who are intentionally trying to throw information chaos into our public deliberation and our discourse. And so that's a tall order. And one of the things that we suggest is massive radical transparency so that every single story, particularly, for example, the K-12 school, anything about the school districts that you have next to your story or embedded within the story, all of links to information, links to the evidence, you know, all of that together. And so that's just one of the things that we need to be doing these days, just because of the state of the institution. I will say that I think journalists, local journalists, particularly those who are writing for the papers that you mentioned, are very, very trustworthy. It's just that there's a grand narrative that's out there right now telling a story that, you know, these reporters are out to dupe them. That's not, I have not seen that. And I've been doing research for about 19 years now, where I'm actually asking journalists, talking to journalists, surveying journalists, focus groups with journalists. I just have not seen that local or mid journalists or even national journalists are out to dupe anybody. I think that what's happening is there's a massive restructuring that's happened in the industry, and journalists are being asked to take on four or five jobs. And so they're not able to be at every single school board member meeting like they used to be able to. And so what we're just suggesting in this retraining that I document in the book is that they sort of shift their priorities and stop doing stuff like the meeting stories and doing more different kinds of engaged work that is operating from within community rather than without.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Sue, can you point us toward somebody you think is getting it right? Whether it's a project that's working across multiple newsrooms or a particular media outlet where you're seeing them do stuff, they're building that trust with their community and you think they're getting it right.
I mean, honestly, public radio across the nation and even Wisconsin, they've been doing it right for a long time. A lot of our nonprofit agencies have been doing right. And Madison's lucky enough to have a saturated media city. And I know personally a lot of the journalists who work at the Isthmus or the Wisconsin State Journal or the Milwaukee Journalist Sentinel or, you know, Channel 3000, Madison Magazine, all of these organizations are doing it right. It's just that circumstances right now are really difficult. They've lost out on their three major tiers of revenue streams. So they're trying to figure out a new business model, even as the information needs of audiences have changed. And so one of the things I'd like to ask is for people to be patient. And to also to follow the models of, for example, public radio, where they're reaching out to different communities, building trust in different ways, trying new things, experimenting. And some of those things are going to fail. But, you know, it's the only way that we're going to continue to have local journalism survive.
And just our last minute, thoughts for when the newsroom in some significant way is different than the people they cover. That could mean a mostly white newsroom covering a community of color. It could mean, you know, news industry concentrated in the city and they want to do a good job covering small towns and rural areas. Can you leave us with some thoughts on how to bridge that gap?
Right. We work a lot with Trusting News, and they have a project called Dimensions of Difference that you can just Google and look at all of the different kits and the guides that we've helped them come up with. And then we evaluate them and then we tweak the guides. And those help journalists understand what their differences are. They help them figure out like what questions that they can ask. They help them learn how to identify and then create relationships with different influencers on different kinds of platforms that represent the differences, the perspectives that they're missing maybe. And so I would point people to that.
So we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
That's Susan Robinson, professor of journalism at UW-Madison. She was with us today to share her new book. It's called How Journalists Engage, A Theory of Trust Building, Identities, and Care. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. Susanna Michaels joins me now in the studio to raise the money that pays for the programs you enjoy, programs like this one. Support from people like you is the largest piece of the funding for WPR programs, and that's why your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is such a big deal.
And in the next 30 minutes, we are looking for 12 more people to join in. Your gift right now is so important because when you give, you are supporting the programs you rely on every day.
Thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't, now's a great time to do it at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Rob, I loved that last segment where we were talking about trust or the lack thereof in the media. And here at WPR, we take take your trust so seriously, and we try to earn it every day. And a trustworthy media is just so very important. And Central Time has so many interesting and relevant topics every day, and they work hard to bring expert guests to talk about them, like the one you had this past segment.
And Wisconsin Public Radio is listener supported, and that means that your donation makes all these conversations every day possible. Choose the amount that works for you, make your gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And when you make that gift, become a sustaining member. As a sustainer, you'll make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or your credit card.
A lot of people will give $10 a month or maybe $15 or $20 a month. The great thing is you get to choose whatever amount's right for you. Becoming a sustainer is super easy. You can do it right now in just a few minutes online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And everything you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio is the result of thoughtful preparation. The Central Time team really does their homework so that you get a great program every day. Show your commitment to this quality. Commit now when you make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's easy to spend a dollar or more a day on the stuff that's part of your routine, a cup of coffee or a favorite treat.
No kidding. But consider the news, the information, the inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. Maybe a dollar a day, which is $30 a month, is just the right donation for you. So sign up right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and support the programs you enjoy every day.
30 minutes left this hour. Already gotten our first few gifts over the course of this hour. Now we're looking for 12 more people to join in your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Ensures a fantastic future for the programs that you rely on.
And if you are a sustaining member already, thank you so much. And you can make today the day that you increase your support of WPR by, say, $5 or $10 a month. But you get to choose that amount. And you can make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Get the new WPR glass tumbler when you give $12 a month or more. The elegant glass is going to be a daily reminder of how much you value Wisconsin Public Radio. You can ask for yours when you give $12 a month or more. Do it right now online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Grab that glass. Support great radio in Wisconsin. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up, cities like Madison and Milwaukee have established LGBTQ communities. But what about smaller towns in the state? We'll hear from an author who looked into what life was like for LGBTQ people in a small Midwestern city. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. Susanna Michaels is with me in the studio to raise the money that pays for the programs you enjoy. Programs like this one. Support for people like you is the biggest piece of funding for the programs you count on, and that's why your support online at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
And we have about 25 minutes left this hour. We are still looking for 11 more people to join in. And thank you if you have already given.
If you haven't, give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Your gift is going to fund the programs that you enjoy.
And maybe you found yourself thinking about something in a new way after you've heard one of our shows. I know that I have. And that's the beauty of the Ideas Network. You hear multiple points of view. You value what you hear from Wisconsin Public Radio. So give now because it's listener supported at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks so much for being a WPR listener. Thank you to everyone who's already a member. It's listener support, your support, that makes WPR an unparalleled resource in Wisconsin and beyond.
Because WPR is your radio home, support it now. Make the news and discussions possible with your first ever gift of $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Introducing the newest addition to your drinkware collection, the WPR Glass Tumbler. Show off your support for WPR while enjoying your favorite beverage from this high-quality 11-ounce glass. Whether it's your morning iced coffee or a relaxing nightcap, add some elegance to the experience when you ask for your WPR glass tumbler with your gift of $12 a month or more. Here's how.
It's quick and easy to do just that online at WPR.org or make a call, 888-202-2552 during the spring member drive. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Susanna Michaels. The WPR programs you enjoy are all possible thanks to your support. Your gift of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, makes a difference for our entire community.
And, you know, the little things that we spend money on, they add up. Maybe you buy a morning coffee or an afternoon candy bar. I sometimes get both. And in this way, we easily spend $20 a month on small expenses, but they're an important part of our day.
And so is listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. So like the money you spend, maybe on that well-deserved treat, make your gift of $20 a month right now for programs that enrich your daily life at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The people of Wisconsin have access to quality news, talk, and entertainment because more than 50,000 individuals and households choose to support WPR.
Wisconsin Public Radio works on the honor system. Join this team effort with your gift right now of, say, $10 a month. You decide the amount and then make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, we have that glass tumbler this drive. It's just here today and tomorrow yet. So make your gift of $12 a month or more in support of WPR programs and ask for this elegant new glass. It'll be a great reminder for how much you love WPR. Ask for yours when you make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, we're starting to count down now. It's today and then tomorrow, and then the drive is over. So if you've been putting it off, well, there's not a lot of putting it off time left. Love to hear from you right now. If you're able, go online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And Rob, we heard from Scott and Kohler, who says, I have listened to WPR for years, but never donated. It was time to step up and contribute. Thank you so much, Scott, for having that realization. And if that's a realization you're having right now, you know, go to the web, go to the phone and make your gift. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Such a fantastic tradition here in Wisconsin, over 100 years and counting now. Public radio here in the state, really one of the places that made public radio exist in the first place. I'm so proud to be and humbled in a lot of ways to be part of that, a small part of that tradition. And I really do understand, I've been doing this for a bit, not quite 100 years, but I understand how important you are in making all of it happen. You are such an important part of every single thing we do here in Wisconsin. So thankful to current members, to people who have given over the years. And I really hope if you haven't given before, you will join in that tradition. Join the team with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you are a sustaining member, thank you so much. But there's a little more you can do. You can make today the day that you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose. And you do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much for giving. We really do count on you to help pay for everything you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. Make your gift right now online at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. LGBTQ community can mean a lot of different things. It can mean places like bars or coffee shops where everyone feels welcome. It could mean local groups involved in activism on LGBTQ issues. Can mean a network of supportive relationships. That kind of social infrastructure is often associated with the biggest cities. But our next guest wanted to know what life for LGBTQ folks looks like outside of large urban centers. So she spent time researching that question in one small city here in the Midwest. Claire Forsty is a teaching consultant at the University of Minnesota's Center for Educational Innovation. Her new book is called Queering the Midwest, Forging LGBTQ Community. Claire, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me to talk with you.
What got you interested in exploring this issue, but not in the biggest cities where we might think there are, you know, big communities and community centers?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, for me, it's actually very much a personal story. I am a queer community member who has lived in, grew up in small cities and towns in the Midwest and in New England. And for me, I know from my own experience and from research that our stories are not told really that as often as they should be. So I felt that I wanted to learn about a particular small city, River City. And I was curious about the lives of members of community members of that small city. So part of my research was spending time in River City, interviewing LGBTQ community members there. And that's why I focused on their stories.
And let's talk about River City. That's a pseudonym. You wanted to cover up the actual name of the city and the people. So you're not, you know, sharing their stories when they didn't want them to be shared. But set it up River City for a little bit. On the face of it, people looking in from the outside might say, well, no, that's not going to be a friendly place.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, River City is a small city that is located pretty far away from the nearest large cities. That's a dimension that really matters for what community looks like. And so that was part of kind of my focus, was thinking through what the experience of LGBTQ people is in a small city that's maybe a regional hub that has towns around it where people travel to that small city for shopping and for other community things. So that's the context a bit of River City. And that's right, it is a pseudonym. I can't share exactly where the city is, but it is here in the Midwest.
So talk a little bit about what you did. You started with some census data and other things, but a lot of this was talking to and meeting people in River City.
Yeah, absolutely. So part of what I do as an ethnographer is I talk to people. I conducted interviews, 54 interviews, with LGBTQ community members and allies. And I attended a lot of LGBTQ community events. So some of the things that you described earlier, everything from, you know, small nonprofits to pride events, pride picnics, to drag shows, all kinds of, you know, book readings, things like that. All kinds of events where I could observe what was going on in the local LGBTQ community.
Now, the word ambivalence comes up a lot in the book. Some people really liked the situation there. Some didn't. A lot of people were in between. Can you talk, first of all, about some of the positives about living in River City that people talk to you about as LGBTQ residents?
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't want to tell what I knew to be a simple story, right? It's complicated. So there were some community members who really loved living in River City. They loved the size of the community. They loved the connections they could make. Maybe they were from there. They had family members there. They had connections to spiritual and religious communities there. And they felt the amenities really fit their interests. They also really liked that it was affordable, right? It was a place they could afford to live and work and build really close relationships with other community members. For other community members, though, it was a little bit more complicated. If folks were not from River City, if they didn't fit with the local faith tradition, if they were not white, they had a lot more challenges finding a sense of community and really feeling like they fit in. So as you said, with the word ambivalence, it's kind of a both and story. So it's a little bit of some folks felt really welcome, felt a strong sense of community, and other folks really struggled and really had a hard time finding that sense of community. I'll share that the highest proportion of folks that I interviewed who cried in my interviews were the ones who really didn't find that sense of community, and many of them ended up leaving. I think that says something about how we think about the future of these communities for those of us who still do live in small cities.
And I think a really important note that comes out really strongly in your book is people might think of a gay community or an LGBTQ community and paint with a broad brush. Even in a fairly small community in this small city, there is a wide diversity of experience, self-definition, and even interest in considering someone a part of a community.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of what I was aiming for was getting at that range of people's identities and experiences and what community looked like to them, what kinds of community they valued. For some people, it was going to a drag show. For other folks, it was attending an event at a library. For others who were, you know, involved in activism, it was organizing marches, community events. It was organizing the annual Pride picnic. And for some folks, it was gathering with a group of like-minded friends and going on a hike. So there certainly are a range of activities, a range of organizations that fall under that really broad umbrella that we think of as LGBTQ community. I want to be clear, gay bars are important, right? They're very important in this moment. And there is so much more than we think exists about LGBTQ communities. There's a broad range of activities, broad range of identities.
talking to Claire Forsty about her book, Queering the Midwest, Forging LGBTQ Community. She focused on a small city here in the Midwest to look at those issues of community. Claire, one tragic event that seems like it brought people together there. I think while you were doing your work there, the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting back in 2016. Can you talk about how that community that didn't always feel like a community really came together after that?
Yeah, I am so glad you asked that question. One of the most powerful experiences for me as a researcher was to see just how quickly community members and allies, who are a central aspect of communities in small cities, came together to organize a really beautiful memorial event following that shooting, which we remember from a few years ago, and which has echoes today. And so what I remember from this event was we had a small program, and we had images of all the people who had been killed in the shooting. And folks had time to spend some time and space looking at these images and thinking about the lives of folks who were lost. This was something that I saw just about every single one of the people I interviewed show up at this event. And there were community leaders who came too. And what I love about this event is that, to me, it gives me a bit of hope about the future, that folks can and do mobilize when something terrible happens. And it makes me think about what's possible too in the future.
A lot of people you talk to, whether they're a part of the LGBTQ community or allies or others, talked about how River City had, in their view, in any ways, changed over the years. In some ways, many people thought in a positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. There were a number of folks I talked to who said, for some reason, the time limit was 20 years. Over the last 20 years, things had really, really rapidly changed in River City, where there started to be spaces where LGBTQ people could be visible and accepted, and folks really appreciated the progress that had happened up to that point. And it's complicated, right? There certainly were still challenges too, but I really heard a number of times that sense of things really have changed. And I think that matches with the national narrative too quite a bit.
A common question for people in River City was, should I stay or should I go? Should I seek out a bigger city that has a bigger, more established community? It's interesting because we often think of, you know, a gay community in a large city, for example, but there's nothing inherently about being LGBTQ that says, I want to live in a big city as opposed to maybe the Midwestern small city or, for that matter, rural area I grew up in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That stay or go question is huge. I think those of us who've grown up in and lived in small cities get that question a lot, kind of like, why are you here? Why are you still here? And there are lots of really good reasons why people do stay. And sometimes there are reasons why folks leave, although they don't always leave for big cities. Sometimes folks leave small cities for other small cities. And so that local context and whether folks can find a space there really matters for that decision, and especially whether folks are able to find friends, able to find family, community, and a sense of belonging. That's part of their decision for why to stay or go. Sometimes they go to other small cities.
One other thing I wanted to ask about, we're not going to cover everything in your book, people talk in some cases about, yeah, this is an accepting community as long as I don't stick out too much.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, exactly. And that is a little bit of a straightforward story. I heard that from many folks, that if I don't out myself, if I stay under the radar, thinking of one participant in particular who said, if I let folks know that I'm a young trans man, I fear for my safety. And so I heard that over and over, as long as I'm not, as another participant said, too rah-rah shishkumba gay, I'll be okay. And so that's something, again, gives us some clues about where there's some space for improvement in the communities that we live in.
Do you have thoughts in just our last minute and a half or so about how smaller communities, if people want to, can help create, welcoming environments where people don't have to be shy about sticking out in those ways?
I do. What is really important in small cities and towns are relationships, right? So the relationships that we have with each other, leveraging those relationships, whether it is maybe bringing a sibling or even a parent to an LGBTQ event, maybe making sure to stand up for our LGBTQ friends in those relationships. I think really leveraging those relationships to build acceptance and to build that sense of community and to show up at events in different ways, right? So often activists were tired, burned out. So any work that we can do to support the good work that's already being done and leaning on those relationships, I feel like I say it a lot, but they really, really matter, especially in small cities and towns.
Claire, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
That's Claire Forestey, teaching consultant at the University of Minnesota's Center for Educational Innovation. She was with us today talking about her new book. It's called Queering the Midwest, Forging LGBTQ Community. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Member Drive. I'm Rob Ferret here with Susanna Michaels. Our goal is to keep bringing you topics like that conversation about LGBTQ community in the Midwest and so many more. Your support makes it happen because listener support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs. Give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And just five more minutes left this hour. We are looking for nine more people to join in when you give. You fund Central Time and all the other WPR programs you count on. So give now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And that last conversation, we got a slice of life for communities around Wisconsin. Visited with a pseudonym there for a Midwestern city, but really got some, I think, unexpected stories or things that people might not expect to hear about what life is like in the Midwest. And these are the kind of eye-opening conversations you can count on here on Central Time.
Yeah, such an important conversation. And WPR is listener-supported, and that means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the many topics that you tune in for every day possible. So choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
This member drive asked for your new WPR glass tumbler. Whether it's for your morning orange juice or an evening cocktail, this elegant glass is going to be your new go-to.
Right. I think if you've got multiple people in your household, you'll be arguing over it. So
Get two.
Yeah, right.
Get twice.
Make room in that drinkware cabinet and ask for your WPR glass tumbler with your gift of $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're proud to make public radio available to anyone who wants to listen, free of cost. But when it comes to keeping this station up and running, we rely on everyone who can to pitch in. The super important first step is listening, and Public Media Giving Days are a perfect time to take the next step, investing. Donate today in support of the journalism that you depend on.
Support that journalism with your gift right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. It's the Spring Member Drive. Rob Ferret here with Susanna Michaels on Central Time. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. That's why your gift of $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, it really does have an important impact.
And you first join the WPR community as a listener by tuning in every day. And after a while, it's time to also join the community as a donor. Funding the great programs on WPR is a group effort.
We do it together, one gift at a time, $1 at a time. If you've never given before, think about a donation of $50 or $100 or maybe make it $10 a month, whatever amount is right for you. It's easy to make a gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
It's easy to make that gift, and once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for, and we like to think of WPR as a place where that is true every single day. So consider a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs you love.
It's hard to buy a lot for $2, but think of all you get from Wisconsin Public Radio all day on this network, all day on the other network, the website where you can stream either those networks live or, careful about this, start going through the archives. Because there's a lot there. You could listen forever on the archives and the WPR app and the news team. And
It goes on and on. $2 a day, it's a pretty good deal. Make your gift. That would work out to $60 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just a couple minutes left this hour. We are looking for 9 more people to join in. Your gift today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 ensures a bright future for the programs you rely on.
Sharon in Deerfield says, I'm a longtime listener. My favorite shows are Larry Mueller and Central Time. Thank you so much, Sharon. How about you? Make your very important gift. Just one more day left in this drive. Love to hear from you now. Grab the new WPR Tumblr when you give $12 a month or more. Most important thing is support a great radio service that counts on you to help pay for it with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much.